Hezbollah says that Israel has targeted several areas in southern Lebanon with artillery fire. French protesters turn out in Paris and Lyon after Emmanuel Macron wins a second term as president. And Russia warning the U.S. and its Western allies that supplying more arms to Ukraine will only add fuel to the fire in the war. Good day, everyone. Welcome to World News here in the Iranian capital. I'm your host, Badr Zajafik. Good to have you with us. Now, Israeli artillery shells southern Lebanon after a projectile allegedly fired from there hits northern occupied territories. Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah has confirmed the attack. The Israeli military claims that a rocket was fired from southern Lebanon, fell near the Israeli town of Shalomi on Sunday night. It says that a rocket landed in an open area and no siren was activated. Small Palestinian factions in Lebanon sporadically fire projectiles at Israel in retaliation for the regime's crimes and deadly crackdown in occupied Palestinian territories. Following the flare-up, the United Nations interim force in Lebanon urged calm and restraint. Well, I talked to our Beirut correspondent, Maryam Salah. She joined us earlier with an update and said that there were no casualties from the Israeli shelling of Lebanon.
Up until now, no human casualties. Even the shelling that occurred was mainly in like we said, open areas, and it was just the feel of terror for some children. Last night was Laylatul Qadr. People were awake. It's Ramadan, so that was reminiscent for many people who had lived the Israeli times of aggressions, of continuous aggressions. That this shelling continued. Of course, this proves to us once more that the Israelis are still calculating their moves because they know that there will be a resistance, Hezbollah's resistance will retaliate if they do try to cross the red line of going anywhere near civilian or residential areas.
The people in different countries have taken to the streets to express solidarity with Palestinians who are facing an intensifying Israeli crackdown. In Germany, hundreds of ralliers waved the Palestinian flag and carried banners in support of the Palestinian people. Similar events were held in the UK. Demonstrators called for international action, including sanctions, to end Israel's growing aggression and occupation of Palestinian lands. Jews also joined the rallies in the British capital, London, denouncing Israeli atrocities. They torched the regime's flag. Good State rallies are also planned in the US, Australia, and Canada. The last Friday of Ramadan is designated as International Good Day. In some countries, the occasion is observed on the last Sunday of the Holy Month. A conference has been held in the Syrian capital, Damascus, for Palestinian youth. The event was organized amid continuous Israeli crimes against Palestinian people in Al-Quds. That was the core subject of that conference. Mohammed Ali has a report from Damascus.
The 16th session of the Quds Conference for Palestinian Youth was held in Damascus. Participants discussed means of uniting Palestinians in service of their cause, hailing resistance operations in occupied Palestine and the people's uprising in the face of Israeli forces.
Our message at this conference is that Palestinian youth outside Palestine are present on the front lines, just like the youth in Quds, Gaza and the West Bank. Palestinians are uniting. The Sword of Palestine battle reflects this unity, and this conference is one of the results of that battle.
The conference is held in parallel with the International Al-Quds Day, which was set by late Imam Khomeini on the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan every year.
The message of Iran on Quds Day is that the only path for regaining Palestinian rights is resistance against the crimes of the Zionist entity. The message of Quds International Day is Islamic unity in the face of Israeli crimes. The track of normalization will not affect regaining Palestinians' rights.
We as Palestinian, Syrian and Arab youth send a message to our people in Quds in Aqsa Mosque that we will support them until the liberation of Palestine, from the sea to the river. Thanks to the Resistance Alliance, today we are more capable of triumphing. And as Imam Khamenei said, Quds will remain the axis.
The final communique called for national unity among all Palestinian factions, as well as re-establishing the PLO with a national plan based on resistance against the Israeli enemy. Events like this reiterate that Palestinian refugees across the world will never give up their right of repatriation. It's a message to Israel that their struggle will never stop until ending the Israeli occupation of Palestinian lands. Muhammad Ali, Damascus.
Protests have erupted in the French capital after incumbent Emmanuel Macron won the Sunday runoff presidential vote. Voters who backed his far-right contender gathered in central Paris after Le Pen was beaten with a comfortable margin of 16%. Clashes erupted after police fired tear gas at ralliers. Officers also used tear gas and charged at protesters in Lyon after demonstrators there staged a march and threw fireworks at a police car. Le Pen has admitted defeat, but has promised to continue to fight. European leaders were quick to congratulate Macron. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen said that a 27-nation bloc can count on France for five more years. German Chancellor Olaf Scholz said that Macron's re-election is a vote of confidence in Europe.
French President Emmanuel Macron has been re-elected in a comfortable victory, defeating the National Rally's Marine Le Pen, just like in 2017. 6 years after Brexit and the election of Donald Trump, France has still not had a shock victory which opposes right-wing economics and globalization. Macron's victory will be celebrated by high finance in Brussels and by the so-called bourgeois bloc, who are his core supporters. However, the Yellow Vests have said for months that they view a Macron victory as intolerable and as a call to social battle.
We had 3 years of a struggle but couldn't get Macron out of power. It shows that there is no solution possible by the ballot, only on the streets. Many people will be quite desperate, so things could turn towards extreme social instability and maybe civil war.
Le Pen did see a major rise in support as compared with 2017, but the nationalist bloc still fell short. It seems that many voters simply could not vote in favor of even a rebranded National Front, whose far-right record goes back decades. Abstention hit 28%, the highest since 1969. Blank or purposely spoiled ballots are estimated to be an additional 12%. The populist bloc, who apparently wanted neither candidate, made their presence felt by denying Macron a convincing victory in terms of the overall electorate.
The biggest revolution to come will be philosophical and intellectual. We need a new way of thinking, a new way of being French, and we need a new France. With Le Pen or Macron, we were sure to lose our democratic rights and personal freedoms, and that's unacceptable to many.
Just like in 2017, Macron is likely to face calls that his victory is not a mandate for his proposed policies, such as raising the retirement age this fall. That means the country is likely to experience continued social unrest, which was unprecedented in Macron's first term. France's political future usually first surfaces in their neo-imperial colonies, like with the Yellow Vests. For the first time, the far right won most of France's overseas territories in what could be a preview of 2027. Rami Mazahari, Paris.
Now, we've asked journalist and political analyst Alaysia Magnier about whether French President Macron will be able to solve the problems that people are dealing with during his second term in office. Let's take a listen.
The real problem is exactly identified by President Emmanuel Macron himself, when he said that he knows that a large number of French people did not vote for him to support him, but to prevent Marine Le Pen from reaching the power. Therefore, many people don't want him, and that was manifested in the first round when he got only 27%. So all the rest that he got between 27 and 58 is the difference that other groups choose Macron because he was the less bad than Le Pen, because he failed to fulfill his program. He failed all the domestic issues that are most important for the French population rather than international policy.
Russia's warning the U.S. and its allies against supplying more weapons to Ukraine, saying that a move is fanning the flames of war. Russian Ambassador to Washington Anatoly Antonov says Moscow sees massive deliveries of arms to Ukraine as an attempt to aggravate the situation and bring about more losses. Antonov says that Russia has sent an official diplomatic note of concern to Washington regarding the issue, but has not received a reply. Now, the comments came after U.S. Secretaries of State and Defense said that Washington is prepared to increase its military support for Kyiv.
They need long-range fires. You've heard them express a need for tanks. And we are doing everything that we can to get them the types of support, the types of artillery and munitions that will be effective in this stage of the fight. We're going to push as hard as we can, as quickly as we can, to get them what they need.
What I'm seeing, at least, is that aid is getting here and other distribution points. It's getting out the door incredibly quickly. Again, this place is going to look different 5 or 6 hours from now than it does right now.
Antony Blinken and Lloyd Austin made a comments near the Ukrainian border in Poland. They visited Kyiv on Sunday night and met with President Zelensky. In the meeting, the two officials pledged more than $700 million in additional direct and indirect military aid. They also cited U.S. President Biden has said that American diplomats would also return to Ukraine as soon as this week. That was the highest level U.S. visit to Ukraine since the beginning of the Russian war on February the 24th. Meantime, the EU remains divided over an embargo on Russian energy imports as the bloc is looking to impose a sixth package of sanctions against Moscow. EU Foreign Affairs Chief Josep Borrell says that there is not sufficient support from all member states for full sanctions against Russian oil or gas. He said that all EU countries are working to cut their dependency on Russian energy imports, so the ban will happen at some point. Some EU members, including Germany, oppose an immediate embargo on Russian energy. Berlin says a sudden cutoff will send all of Europe into a recession. The bloc is set to hold a summit to the end of this month to further discuss the matter. A top EU diplomat has said that the Union is preparing smart sanctions against Moscow to maximize pressure on it while minimizing damage to the bloc. Iranians have marked the night of destiny, the occasion when the Holy Quran was revealed to the Prophet of Islam some 14 centuries ago. Yusuf Jalali has a report from the holy city of Mashhad.
Praying in supplication and making the best of wishes, that's what Muslims do every year on Laylatul Qadr, or the Night of Destiny. It's a night when the holy book of Quran is believed to have been revealed to Prophet Muhammad. And to Muslims, it's a once-in-a-year occasion to reach out to God to wash away their sins and fulfill their wishes.
We are marking the sacred nights of destiny. It's a great honor to be able to attend this holy occasion. I pray for the well-being of my family and all fellow Muslims.
The night of destiny is the night when our wishes come true if we attend the ceremony and pray to God, as it is a night when God has said in the Quran that angels descend from heaven to listen to our wishes.
Mashhad is one of the hot spots of Laylatul Qadr ceremonies, since it is home to the shrine of the 8th Imam of Shia Muslims, Imam Reza, who is one of the descendants of the Prophet of Islam. Every year on this night, the shrine gets jam-packed with pilgrims, or they keep vigil while praying.
The holy shrine of Imam Reza is like our home, as we regard Imam Reza as a loving father for all of us Shia Muslims. You can attend Laylatul Qadr ceremonies anywhere, but here, spirituality is at its peak.
No exact date is provided for the Night of Destiny, but all Islamic references are unanimous that the Quran was revealed to the Prophet on one of three different dates, the 19th, the 21st, or the 23rd night of the holy month of Ramadan. Now this is the third night of destiny.
Muslims never miss out on Laylatul Qadr, as they truly believe that on this night, God determines their destiny for the upcoming year based on their wishes. Now, as this is the last and most probable night of the Quran's revelation to the Prophet, worshippers here keep on their whispers with God until dawn. Yusuf Jalali from the Holy Shrine of Imam Reza in Mashhad.
Amid the COVID pandemic, the marijuana business has turned into a flourishing trade in Canada with more shops opening every day. This has raised concerns about a damaging impact that widespread use of drugs could have on society.
In a recent report by the New York Times, Canada's main city of Toronto was described as the Wild West of marijuana shops. According to the report, Ontario's provincial government permitted the shops by emergency order to keep operating during the COVID-19 pandemic, even during lockdowns. During this period, to the investors' delight, shares in the stocks of licensed medical marijuana growers in Canada have multiplied in price. However, the marijuana business was already expected to flourish, even before the pandemic started in 2019 and right after Canada's Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, to fulfill a campaign promise, introduced legislation to legalize the recreational use of marijuana in Canada. The prospects look good. Eventually, the Government of Canada legalized cannabis for recreational use on October 17, 2018. The Cannabis Act creates a legal and regulatory framework for controlling the production, distribution, sale, and possession of cannabis in Canada. Canada is now the second nation after Uruguay to completely legalize marijuana as a consumer product in an effort to extinguish the criminal trade and keep the substance out of the hands of youth by regulating the market. However, growing, importing, exporting, or selling marijuana, particularly to minors, outside licensed channels, remain a serious crime. Meanwhile, critics of the cannabis law highlight the damaging impact to society of the widespread use of the drugs. When the use of cannabis becomes more widespread, the drug can also have downsides, including acute injuries and illnesses. In some cases, marijuana could lead to cyclical vomiting syndrome, a condition characterized by vomiting and severe abdominal pain. And also, those who use cannabis are more prone to mental illnesses.
That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood qudde saratani Israel mukhalifim.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is a part of the speech delivered on April 12, 2022 by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the government officials of the Islamic Republic. In the Holy Quran, God says, "Thus do we deliver those who have faith," is good news for us. It means that by praising God, asking for His forgiveness, acknowledging our sins and apologizing to Him, we too can achieve salvation. So repenting is done for committing a wrong deed and for not doing things that we must have done and for bad management. It is necessary for both these things. The point that exists is that we refer to the executives of the Islamic Republic as Mas'ul. We describe them as Mas'ul, that as Mas'ul. What does Mas'ul signify? It signifies that we will be questioned, literally meaning the one who is questioned. For what? For the things that we did and the things that we did not do. Of course, in the common political language of the world, such questioning is conducted by people. But more important than that, is God's questioning. This is more important in the Islamic Republic. Of course, people's questioning is important as well, and this is a pillar of religious democracy.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Having a sense of responsibility towards the people is one of the pillars of the Islamic Republic and democracy. But much more important than this is having a sense of responsibility before God. O God, bestow your mercy on me when my reasoning fails before you, when I cannot find my tongue to give you answers, and when my mind makes a mistake when you ask me a question. Things are like this on Judgment Day. They will question us, but we will have no answers. We might have prepared some arguments and we express them, but they are rejected. Then we notice that our reasoning is not correct. If they ask us, why did you do this? Why did you not do that? We might have something to say and we express it, but it will be rejected. O God, bestow your mercy on me when my reasoning fails before you. When I cannot find my tongue to give you answers, and when my mind makes a mistake. When you ask me a question, this is in the holy supplication of Abu Hamza al-Thumali. Things are like this.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You guided me.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Israeli military forces have raided the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in the occupied old city of Al-Quds as worshippers gathered for dawn prayers, with medics reporting that more than 40 Palestinians were injured as a result of the raid. Local sources said some worshippers were trapped inside the mosque amid clouds of tear gas, with the regime troops throwing stun grenades at them. According to the Palestinian media, at least 43 Palestinians were injured in the raid. The development comes a day after as many as 30 Palestinians were wounded after Israeli forces continued their violent attacks against worshippers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in the occupied Al-Quds. The troops used rubber bullets, tear gas canisters, stun grenades, and pepper spray against the worshippers, who have been braving increasing aggression ordered by the Israeli regime since the beginning of the holy fasting month of Ramadan.
Right now, of course, the site of the mosque is sacred to three major religions,
but the Israelis have no consideration for anyone but themselves and their own wants and desires. So right now, when they are entering the mosque, the sacred mosque, attacking people while they're praying, worshippers are there for dawn prayers, and the IDF soldiers and the settlers are simply invading the mosque, firing tear gas, rubber bullets, and live rounds of ammunition sometimes, all to terrorize and drive them away because they want the site completely for themselves.
The series of raids on the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound, one of the holiest sites in Islam, began last Saturday when the Israeli troops injured more than 150 Palestinians there. Israel's new campaign against the Palestinians doesn't stop at the occupied West Bank. On Thursday, the Israeli army carried out airstrikes across the Gaza Strip, targeting positions belonging to the resistance groups. Similar developments last year led to an 11-day war between Israel and Gaza-based resistance groups. The conflict killed over 260 Palestinians, including scores of women and children. The Arab League broke its silence on the Israeli raids on Al-Aqsa, calling on the regime to prevent Israelis from entering the compound. In an emergency meeting in the Jordanian capital, Amman, the organization warned that Israel's actions threaten to ignite a cycle of violence, and the attacks and violations represent a blatant provocation to the feelings of Muslims. But how will such declarations help defuse the situation when, ironically, countries that have recently normalized their ties with Israel, including the United Arab Emirates and Morocco, were in attendance at the meeting? People took to the streets of the Jordanian capital, Amman, in solidarity with the Palestinians on Friday, calling on the government to expel the Israeli ambassador and scrap a peace treaty signed with the regime. Such protests have been held in several different countries, but without a unified international response to Israel, the protests are unlikely to be enough to put an end to such violations.
The international community, as you mentioned, is not doing anything about this. It's so hypocritical to see the international community condemn the things that the Russians are doing to the Ukrainians when the Israelis are doing the exact same things to the Palestinians, and that and their crimes are supported by the United States and other nations.
In the absence of any practical measure taken against the regime, resistance seems to be the only option.
Russian President Vladimir Putin announced on Thursday that Russian forces have won the battle for the strategic southern city of Mariupol. Russian forces appear to be in control of the city, including its important but now seriously damaged port. At a joint appearance with his defense minister Sergei Shoigu, Putin declared that, quote, the completion of combat work to liberate Mariupol is a success. The Russian president offered congratulations to Shoigu and Russian forces. But what is the strategic significance of the latest developments of the war? Mariupol is a major port in Ukraine's eastern Donbass region. It is situated between areas held by pro-Russian forces in Ukraine and Crimea, the Black Sea Peninsula that came under Russian control in 2014. Taking the city now will allow Russia to connect the two areas as it steps up its military campaign in Ukraine's east. Moscow can now secure more of the southern coastline, complete a land bridge between Russian soil and the Crimean Peninsula, and free up more troops to join the battle for Donbass, which is Ukraine's eastern industrial heartland. Despite Russia's announcement of victory in Mariupol, hundreds of Ukrainian troops and civilians are still holding out inside a giant steel factory in the city. Russian forces have tried for weeks to dislodge them, but to no avail. The Kremlin says there is no need for Russian troops to enter the complex passageways of the sprawling Azovstal steelworks. The Russian president ordered his forces to block off the industrial area so that, quote, not even a fly can get through. Ukraine and its Western allies have disputed Russia's claim of complete victory in the city. But Moscow seems to be already looking beyond the southern city. Russian officials say the war's main objective is now capturing the mostly Russian-speaking Donbass region. Last month, Russian forces were driven away from the capital Kiev and northern Ukraine. Things will definitely not be smooth in the east either, as Western nations rush to funnel heavy arms into Ukraine to help it counter the offensive.
The Ukrainian armed forces were trained by NATO, equipped by NATO, and trained to the standards of NATO. So that is a major factor as to why the Ukrainian armed forces have put up stiff resistance to the Russian army.
U.S. President Joe Biden has announced another $800 million to help Ukrainian forces fight in the east. He said this week that Washington and its allies are moving as fast as possible to provide Kiev with the weapons that it needs. According to Biden, the U.S. and its allies are facing a critical window of time where they are going to set the stage for the next phase of this war. Much is at stake in Ukraine for major world powers. The war has been widely described as an escalation of the never-ending tug of war between the West and the Russian Federation. The outcome of the conflict could have far-reaching consequences and may shift the balance of power in the region and beyond.
The war in Ukraine is raging on. Russia's military operation in Ukraine is entering a new phase, which is focused on eastern Ukraine as the opposing troops remain locked in combat along a 300-mile front line. The Russian Defense Ministry has given the Ukrainian forces an ultimatum to lay down their arms. Ukraine has reached a preliminary agreement with Russia to evacuate civilians. But the United States and its allies seem to be determined to prolong the war. U.S. President Joe Biden is expected to announce within the coming days another military aid package for Ukraine about the same size as the $800 million one announced last week. It will include artillery systems, artillery rounds, armored personnel carriers, and unmanned coastal defense boats. It would bring the total U.S. military aid to Ukraine since the Russian military offensive in February to well over $3 billion U.S. dollars. Kiev has called for additional weapons and support to stave off Moscow's new offensive in the eastern Donbas region, where Russian forces have been amassing after their withdrawal from the Ukrainian capital. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau also said Canada would be sending heavy artillery and promised to provide more details. There are some reports that the U.S. is using the Ukraine conflict to prepare for wars against Russia and China. The U.S. military is training to fight in an environment heavily shaped by the Russian military campaign against Ukraine that was launched about 2 months ago. The purpose of this month's war game in California is to prepare for future wars against Russia and China. The report said the role players in the exercise at the Fort Irwin National Training Center in the Mojave Desert speak Russian. About 4,500 soldiers from the 2nd Brigade, 1st Cavalry Division are pitted against the fictional Devonian forces, the exercise's apparent stand-in for the Russians. The enemy fires rockets and missiles in the drill, all while using a sophisticated disinformation campaign to make false accusations against U.S. troops.
So I think that the United States, the U.S. corporations, the U.S. government, the officials within United States politics and economics have their head on straight enough to know that an open war with Russia is against their profit motive, is against their motive for world domination, because there simply would be no world left to dominate.
The U.S. has also warned China that it will face consequences if it helps Russia evade sanctions in its invasion of Ukraine.
China has so far refrained from condemning Russia for the invasion and has said Moscow's legitimate security concerns should be taken seriously. There has also been growing tensions between Beijing and Washington and its allies in the Asia-Pacific region, including over Taiwan and the South China Sea. The Pentagon and U.S. lawmakers cited countering China in passing this year's $777.7 billion defense budget.
Just days ago, Israeli occupation forces attacked Al-Quds' Al-Aqsa Mosque, wounding more than 150 Palestinians while it was filled with Ramadan worshippers on one of the holiest days in the Islamic calendar. Now, in a fresh bout of violence, Israeli forces have again targeted Palestinian worshippers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Dozens of Israeli military forces have stormed into the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in the occupied old city of Al-Quds and restricted the entry of Palestinian worshippers into the Flashpoint holy site to secure the incursion of hundreds of extremist settlers to mark the Passover holiday. This is while the day before, the settlers entered the compound amid a heavy military deployment of Israeli soldiers to mark the Passover holiday and perform their own prayers. This year, the Jewish religious occasion coincides with the Muslim fasting month of Ramadan at a time when thousands of Muslims, predominantly Palestinians, usually stay at the holy site for worship, a rare convergence that will drive unusually high numbers of Jewish, Muslim, and Christian worshippers to the old city of Al-Quds. Far-right Jewish groups have even called for raids of the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound during the Jewish Passover holiday and the offering of animal sacrifices in its courtyards, which has not occurred since ancient times. Sacred to Muslims and revered by Jews, the Al-Aqsa Mosque, Islam's third holiest site, has long been a flashpoint in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
And it's really pushing the Palestinians out of Jerusalem. It's trying to Judaize the city of Jerusalem. And we saw them attacking completely innocent people, you know, old people, women, children. So it's not really about security for Jewish worshippers.
Palestinians in the occupied territories have reacted to the raids by the Israeli security forces by going out to the streets in support of the worshippers. Israel, meanwhile, is trying to paint a different narrative. The Western-backed media is hard at work painting the Palestinians as the aggressors, even calling the worshippers rioters and terrorists. Israel says its so-called security operation is an effort to protect freedom of worship from violent rioters desecrating the site and endangering the public, but it has a tough task since scores of videos show the opposite to be the case. Palestinians are angry on a wide variety of fronts. They are suffering immensely due to the Israeli occupation. Additionally, they are amazed at the international community's indifference to Palestinian suffering amid the Ukraine crisis. Furthermore, the paralysis of the Palestinian leadership has added salt to their wounds, who seems unable to do anything. The resistance group Hamas, however, has described the crisis as the continuing terrorism of the occupation and its crimes, attempts to Judaize Al-Quds and to perform sacrifices in the Al-Aqsa Mosque to build its so-called temple during what they call Passover. The Gaza Strip, meanwhile, is at risk of another Israeli onslaught. Israeli tanks and armored vehicles have made an incursion into northern Gaza Strip, raising the possibility of another war.
Governments around the world need to stop supporting the Israeli aggressions against the Palestinians. And I can say myself, as a rabbi and as a Jewish person, the Jewish communities around the world have to stop supporting the Israeli aggression against the Palestinians.
A similar Israeli assault on Al-Aqsa during Ramadan last year sparked a military confrontation between resistance factions in Gaza, led by Hamas and Israel. Hamas has said this year Israel's assault on the Al-Aqsa and its worshippers is a declaration of war. And sure enough, early on Tuesday, the Gaza Strip came under Israeli assault, reportedly after rocket fire from the Gaza Strip.
This is a sure sign that another war may be in the making.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is Viewpoints. I'm Atar, the host of this program. This series of the program Viewpoints is mainly concerned with the speeches and thoughts of the Supreme Leader of Iran, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, also known as Imam Khamenei. With me in the studio are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Shaykh Ali and Sayyid Mohsen. Sayyid Mohsen, assalamu alaikum, welcome to the show.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah, thanks for inviting.
So, and Shaykh Ali, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
So, very recently, in one of the speeches of Imam Khamenei, he talked about a very important concept, which is Jihad al-Tabyin. And so many people in Iran, inside Iran and outside Iran, were shocked by this, we can say, type of look at the world and at the concept of jihad. Because this is the first time that this term has been coined by the Rahbar and he used it. So now there are so many, we can say, explanations, commentaries and interpretations written on this concept. Of course, Rahbar in his speech gave us a very nice framework for Jihad al-Tabyin. But this is good to be more familiar with this concept, maybe for the English-speaking people all around the world through this radio show, Viewpoints. Nowadays, what is the new aspect and what is the new angle to this type of Jihad al-Tabyin? Because we do not have the presence of a Ma'asum over here.
Right.
Okay?
Right. So
how it's going to be successful, I mean.
Right. Okay. I'm not going to make any claims, so to speak, but look at this, you know, look at the past 40 years, right? So back in the day, you have this infallible, immaculate imam sent by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, who is a perfect being, as we believe in it, right?
Yes.
He was not able to bring about a revolution. People did not support him, right? The perfection of the imam is established. People did not support him, right? Hence, the revolution didn't come about. Fast forward to 42, 43 years ago. Imam Khomeini, who's not infallible in that sense, like 12 imams, right? He is someone who is a faqih, who is a jurisprudent. He's a student of the school of Ahlul Bayt, alayhi salatu wassalam. He rises, and there are millions who support him. And if you look at the trajectory for last 40 plus years, it keeps going up. The popularity of this movement, the divine movement, which was launched by Prophet and Ahlul Bayt, it keeps going up.
Okay.
Right? Alhamdulillah, the support keeps increasing. Yes, the enemies, they keep increasing too. And the attacks, they keep increasing too.
Okay.
But this, as a matter of fact, is one of the evidences that this divine movement is going uphill. And alhamdulillah, it is progressing.
Okay.
Now, this, the climax of this divine movement is the reappearance of Imam Mahdi Jalallahu Ta'ala Farajahu Sharif.
That's right.
Today, if you look at the world, the people of the world, Muslims and non-Muslims, they're desperate for the help of Allah Subhanahu Wa Ta'ala. They see that things have gotten out of their own control.
Okay.
And no ism and no system, let it be political system, social system, economic system, education system, has been able to satisfy a normal human being like you and me.
That's right.
Right?
Okay.
So we are now so desperate that that last hujjah and the imam of the time, he reappears. So we are way more ready than people who were back in the day like 1400 years ago.
Okay. That's right.
So it is going in a positive direction.
So when we get to the main topic, Sayyid, which has to be explained to the, as you said, to the world outside of the of the Islamic lands and also inside the Islamic lands. So according to Jihad al-Tabin, there have been some, for example, topics that has been outlined. For example, one of them is the Ma'arif al-Din, or for example, the Islamic knowledge. And also the Islamic principles. The other one could be the revolutionary values. You know, these are important. The other thing is we can't say that's right. Some revolutionary strategies which has to be taken, and the other parts gets into the, some of the realities. I mean, the current stage in which we are in. When you look at these topics, it's really shocking that the methodology and the details that are given over here is really huge. But the case is that it needs an absolutely professional teamwork in order to be, we can say, done properly. Because each category belongs to specific people. Do you believe that we have, sufficient and capable trainees in order to apply such rulings in our society, or for example in the Muslim lands, to do their best in order to struggle for clarification or not?
Well, obviously at this point, since the Supreme Leader has just done this speech, it was a couple of months ago.
Yes.
Yes, at the moment we might have a short number of people who can work on it, but obviously it is the role of media. We have media in our hands. We can multiply one thing to many times through media. And all those, because especially when the Supreme Leader talked about this Jihad Tabiyeen, he has emphasized on those youth that are using the internet, they are on different medias to propagate this thing through the media, what they have in their hands.
Okay.
So, but yes, there is a big number of lists. For example, in the Ma'arif al-Din, the most important thing which I can see here is the topic of Mahdaviyat, which we were unable to basically even, explain this to the people or to the world.
Yes.
And if we can, in its true sense, because, you know, everyone is waiting for the last savior. It has different, you know, they have their own definitions. Yes. But we being a Muslim,
the common
also,
ground between all. Yes. Okay.
But this is a common ground. Yes. And obviously we can work on it all together. Because I said this to one of the Pops, you know, that we are one in common in one thing.
Yes.
That they're waiting for the Jesus Christ. We are also waiting for him.
Okay.
You know, according to the Muslim teachings, we are also waiting for him. He's the prophet of God. And he will come when the Imam will come, the Imam of the time. So Mahdaviyat is important. It is important for the Christians as well and for the Muslims. Because the Mahdaviyat which we have in our concept, we are also waiting for the Jesus Christ in that Mahdaviyat.
Okay.
It is not without the Jesus. So there are many commonalities, common grounds on which we can obviously have them on our side, or we can explain it. So therefore, it is the matter of explaining. It is the matter of using the proper media to, you know, convey your message. So the number does not matter. Obviously, when Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, when he came and he started preaching Islam, he was alone.
Yes.
And there were a couple of people with him in the Mecca. And then after 3 years, obviously, it was announced to make a open announcement of the Islam. And slowly the people, they were gathered around him. So this is not a matter. Obviously, we have many people. There are enough. There is enough media. There are enough sources to convey. But the only thing is, if we can pay more attention to our own Muslim brothers and sisters who are living in different parts of the world, obviously, you know, the most common language or the most spoken language in the Muslim world is Urdu.
Yes.
The most language amongst the Muslims, it is not Arabic.
You mean I'm talking about the speakers?
Yes, speakers.
Okay.
I'm talking about the speakers.
Really?
The number of the speakers that we have in India and Pakistan who knows Urdu and in other parts of the world who are from there, they migrated, it is more than any other language. It does not, because when you look at the Arab Arab speakers, obviously we have only the Middle East, the Saudi Arabia, and there are some other countries.
That's why Rahbar said that do not limit yourself to the English language as a foreign only
and
foreign
English
language.
English language is the smallest, you know, number of people we have. But obviously when you look at the other languages, the most important language in the Muslim world is Urdu.
That's
so
right.
Therefore, there are many people, obviously, that are working on this, and they know their duty, how to do it. And
how to organize them? I mean, because, you know, this is the case. For example, the Rahbar gives a speech and talks about an important topic, and different organizations starts working on them without knowing that they are working on them together. So all of a sudden, after 2-3 months, different interpretations and commentaries will come out of the speech of the Rahbar. One topic, for example, this is Jihad al-Tabin, but this organization has written this on that. How to organize them?
This is good.
Do you believe this is
good?
Doesn't it get, for example, to divergence or divergence?
Obviously,
from
the main theme is the same. The explanations are different.
Okay.
The methods are different. So you might see a method applying in UK, and it is not applicable in America, for example. You know, there is a methodology which you can apply in the Urdu-speaking people, not the English-speaking people.
Okay.
So it doesn't matter. It's good.
Yes.
Even when we have, like, even for the Quran, we have many explanations or the exegesis. And you just use all of them. And the one who wants the guidance, he picks up the method out of that.
That's
so
right.
It is good to have this. Obviously, we need to have this. The more wordings we have, the more mouths we will have, inshallah, the better we will, inshallah, will expand the idea that we have over here.
That's all right. So, Sheikh Ali, how to organize it? I mean, how to organize different people here and there?
I think the mere
belief is good. You know, belief in heart is really a good thing.
Right.
That they believe in doing this thing for Jihad al-Tabin.
Right.
But how to organize them in a better way?
Well, it's a discussion enough in itself. As Sayyid has mentioned, having different interpretations of the same text or same context and same topics is not necessarily a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'll add a tatemme here, a side note, that as long as they don't contradict each other. Because if they contradict each other, they end up confusing the masses. So that's something that all of those who are working in cultural fields, in media field, and in Jihad al-Tabiyyin, they need to be very careful of. At the end of the day, we don't want to confuse the people. Now, one of the advantages of having multiple voices on the same topic is, as we say it in Iran, guftaman sazi, right? So in order for us to make something a popular narrative, there has to be multiple organizations.
We have to establish a discourse.
Multiple
the discourse
organizations,
of Angalab,
multiple people, multiple experts, they need to be speaking about that thing and elaborating it, right? So in a way, it is good. Now, what you're pointing out, I think, is building synergies between these groups and these teams and these individuals. And definitely that's something that's ideal. But, you know, to make it very robotic and very controlled may not be a very good idea. So even those synergies that need to be developed, they have to be very carefully calibrated and put in place, you know, with the consent of these teams. And it has to be a slow process.
That's right.
Right? An evolution, so to speak, right?
Some people might ask, what is my responsibility as an individual? For example, in a family, as a father, mother, I don't know, a child, a school manager, a school teacher, to listen to Jihad al-Tabiyyin and then apply it in my life.
One thing that the leader was very vocal and very clear about is that every one of us, Hamema, he said every one of us needs to enter this arena of Jihad al-Tabiyyin. Now, I was listening to this one analysis of one of the senior brothers, and he said it's only for Khawas. And I disagreed with him. I have to see him in person, inshallah, to discuss this. He said it very explicitly. I have his audio.
Yes.
He said it very clearly that it's only for Khawas. The only role that Awam has is to share what Hawass has have to say, like just share it on social media. I don't quite agree with this interpretation, and I will discuss with him. Now, how do all of the layers of the society, they become part of this jihad-e-tabyeen is something, again, a detailed topic. Yes. So, for instance, if you're a youth going to a school or a college, and if you're attending, you know, let's say a very basic level of madrasa at the moment, you know, your responsibility is going to be different from somebody who has been at the Hawza or, you know, in academia let's say, 30 years, right? Then if you're a subject matter expert on something, your responsibility is different from a sister who is a housewife.
That's right. Right?
So all of those, you know, different segments of society, they need to be identified, and proper programs need to be developed for them to be able to be part of this jihad-e-tabyeen.
Inshallah. For sure, there are some tools needed, you know, for these jihad-e-tabyeen. And
can I just mention a couple of more things?
Where did the methodology go?
Yeah, I think the methodology and the tools has to be shifted to the other session.
Okay.
No problem? Because we are done for this session.
We're done?
We are done for this session.
Okay? Yeah.
So for more details, how to practically apply them in our lives, what are the tools and what are the manifest methodology, let's discuss them, all of them, inshallah, in our upcoming session of the program. Thank you, my Sayyid Mohsen.
Welcome.
And Shaykh Ali, it was very kind of you for a nice explanation regarding jihad-e-tabyeen and its definition. It was very kind of you. And thank you much, dear listeners, for listening to us. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/Call of Islam page. Also, our YouTube channel and Instagram page, Call of Islam Radio. Till another episode, God bless you. Fi amanallah.
The same when I'm too concerned by what they say. Why should I wanna have you? To doubt you would be the worst mistake. Deep inside I know that amidst all the darkness and everything which makes no sense, I know that you exist. Guides me through my darkest nights, shows me right from wrong in a world that often lies. Cause I don't need anyone, anything in life but you. No, I don't need anyone to show me my way. No, I don't need anyone but you.
Hello everyone, and welcome back to another episode of The Subcontinent.
The Subcontinent.
Hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Subcontinent. On this program, we will address the most important issues in the South Asian region that affect the governments, organizations, communities, and most importantly, the people. And as always, we will dissect the issues and present you with different perspectives from experts and people. So, stay tuned.
In this edition of The Subcontinent, we will discuss the political crisis in Pakistan, a history of American interference in the country, and external dimensions of Imran Khan's ouster. And we shall also take a look at efforts by Western and Eastern power blocs to court India in the wake of the Ukraine war and growing strains in New Delhi-Washington ties.
Amid the deepening political crisis in Pakistan, opposition leader Shehbaz Sharif has taken over as a new premier, with the cricketer-turned-politician Imran Khan back on the streets, mobilizing his supporters against what he calls an imported government. Khan's repeated claims that the United States orchestrated a regime change conspiracy against his Pakistan Tehrik-Insaf government has once again brought to fore America's intentions.